All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast, Wednesday, October 31st, All Hallows Eve, spooky. That's I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are from the spooky DFSR.com. So DFSR.com/deals will get you that Halloween deal special today. Free for 7 days and then just $24.95 a month after that. It covers a free trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, Optimal Lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA, NFL, premium chat, premium content. It's all covered under one subscription package. So go and check that out. DFSR.com/deals for this Halloween deal. But are you candy hungover? Because I know that your crazy town does, for some reason, does trick-or-treating the day before Halloween. Do you get to then double it back tonight, like run it back in another town, or they just kind of throw everyone off?
You just sounded so cute, by the way, when you called it trick-or-treating. You're like one of the five-year-olds that came to my door. Like, trick-or-treat.
Yeah, I was hoping that kind of just would go unnoticed, but I realized it
was fully noticed. It was a lovely Halloween. We had a lot of nice costumes. My parents were giving away big candy bars right next door.
Oh, they were the good ones.
A lot of buzz around that, and they gave away 190 candy bars. So
I saw your dad post on Facebook 200. Okay, no one wants to hear that. So because you were out,
a lot of kids for. We have a great Halloween neighborhood. If you're ever in New Hampshire for Halloween, please feel free to email me and stop by.
Well, because you were out last night walking around the town with your kids, you did not see that Kemba Walker was an 80% start in cash games at 9,000 on FanDuel.
Wow.
And I actually don't have the number. Okay, so I want to ask you, before we get into today's games, which we're going to, I was trying
against
to explain,
Miami. Wow. People
I was
are high
trying to explain
Kemba
this
Walker.
In cash last I was in cash. I was trying to explain this in our chat last night. I said going into the game, we did not have him in our lineups. That ended up being fine. He was like 4x or something like that. It was pretty bad at his $9,000 salary. I want to get your thoughts on a guy like this where he he's shooting way more per game and per minute this season. There's no doubt about it. Okay. Now the numbers have been a little lumpy. And I explained to the chatters, I said, I have about the biggest increased multiplier that I've ever been comfortable giving a player this early in the season based on increased usage, because he has been shooting more, right? And he's just still not getting there. Like, and it ended up working out. I sort of nervously laughed when I saw that he was 80%. I thought it was absolutely nuts. Do you think that people are still going too overboard on early season returns? I think I'm still comfortable giving him a usage bump. I think the plan is to have him shoot more, and Charlotte's, I think, playing faster pace. But do you think people still go too overboard with just early because it's one thing to have a 5-game stretch in like December, right, where it's a little harder to see, like, oh, if the guy's on fire or not. But when you start a season, you only have this season's worth of numbers to really like look when you're looking at box scores or game logs. Does that make sense? What I'm saying, like, do you think people still go too overboard with early season returns on specific players?
Well, it reminds me of an article I read on FanGraphs about analyzing early season baseball performance. And this was years ago that I read this, but the author's principal point was something along the lines of, if you had a good 10-game stretch in August, it would move your batting. Like, if you batted 400 for a 10-game stretch in August, it would move the average batting average by like 10 points. You know, it would be like, it would do next to nothing at all. But if you do it to start the season, everyone's all of a sudden wondering what you did in the preseason, you know, what you did to change your swing, and, you know,
something looks wrong and like whatever, like, you know,
or if it goes right, it goes the other way. You start the season 0-25, which is just absolutely happened in baseball. You know, people, right, everyone wants to break it down. And I think there's good reason for that. You know, like, a lot of times when something unusual is happening, there's a reason for it. And in this case, you know, shots are very different than you know, your batting average on balls in play or something in baseball, where shots you just have control over, you choose to shoot or not. And sure, sometimes the opposing defense is going to give you more opportunities than, you know, than normal. But most of the time, it's just based on your ability to even just take open shots and the plan for shooting them. The really interesting thing for Walker for me right now is that he's not only shooting more, but he's shooting more efficiently than he has in the past. And that's where I start to feel more comfortable, even on a team that has a pretty known roster here. You know, Walker is right around, you know, that 27, 28 age season where you've seen some. I mean, NBA is kind of tricky. It tends to actually range younger in terms of hitting your prime, but where Walker could be just in his prime right now. You know, he's been a good player the last couple of years, but the fact that he is. Like, if he's going to shoot 40% from three, he should shoot more than 7 threes a game, you know?
Yep. So, and I think one thing, the reason I was able to, and we don't need to have this make this all Kemba Walker podcast, and I know I brought it up, but the reason I was also willing to, like, say there might be just a fundamental shift in, like, offensive philosophy is they do have a new coach this year, and when there's a new coach, even though the roster is the same, I'm willing to say, like, oh, The new coach's plan might just be like, hey, homeboy, you take as many shots as you need to, right? Like, just go and get yours because maybe we want to trade you or whatever the plan is going to be later. But, like, that's where I kind of felt more comfortable with it. Because I was also saying in chat, too, that, you know, this early season idea of, like, something looks wrong. I was like, the list is forever on guys. Like, so last night it was at Eric Gordon. It's like, something looks wrong with Eric Gordon. I'm like, dude, there's nothing wrong with him. He's just missing shots right now, and you're just noticing it a little bit more because I'm just going to give you the list of guys that everyone's complaining about that go off. Klay Thompson. Oh, something looks wrong. Okay. He hits the world record for most three-pointers in a game. Cat Towns, or Karl-Anthony Towns. Something looks wrong. Just completely crushes the Lakers. Kyrie Irving. Oh, we don't want to play Kyrie Irving. Just drops 30 points in the game last night because to a man, and I was saying, to a man, the only thing different about these guys was they had five games of just bad shooting. That's it. And now Gordon had six, and so we're going to get one more game of that, right? Like, nothing else has changed except for the shots are falling down. So anyway, you can hear my frustration because this is what I was talking about in chat last night. Anyway, let's get into...
And I think that's good. And actually, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say I'd like to maybe start the podcast going deep on something. I think just the mercenary, these are the picks, these are the games, might get stale for people at some point. So hopefully you took something away from a little Go Deep segment sponsored by FantasyFactor.com. Go check them out.
The list is long of guys that you just do not use your eyes. Look, I know Bayesian's kind of stuff wants to tell people, like, use your priors. And, like, that does count for something, I think. And it never counts for nearly as much as anyone think it does when they've watched, like, you know, a half of a basketball from Karl-Anthony Towns or whatever. Okay, let's get into
But that's not a good prior. I mean, just to hopefully there's no statisticians tearing their hair out. Your priors are everything leading up to the moment, and you shouldn't be adjusting your priors much based on you watched one game where Kemba Walker shot 3 for 15 from three.
Course. I'm saying that people overrate their priors is what I'm saying. Like, people overrate their own priors. Like, they overrate their own ability to have, like, judge something ahead of time and then be able to judge it in the moment. That's why I'm not using that one thing as a prior. I'm saying that, like, people tend to think that their priors count for a lot more, and they really, really just don't. I'm like the average NBA fan level. That's mostly what I'm saying. Okay. Detroit goes in and plays Brooklyn. Brooklyn a -2.5-point favorite here. I wrote up Andre Drummond as a play. There's some historical context, mostly because the Nets simply can't defend big men at all. And Andre Drummond has completely destroyed them at times in the past. And to start this year, he dropped a 24-20 on them in the first game of the season. Has struggled a little bit in the short term. He had some foul trouble against Boston, had an ejection against Philly. Do you see him as, like, a cash game play tonight? And there's, outside the Warrior guys, and we have some Anthony Davis stuff, there's not a ton of guys to spend up for. Could you see yourself spending all the way up for Drummond?
Yeah, I like Drummond. I think Detroit's this way, and I mean, a lot of teams are kind of like this way. The smart teams are anyway, where when they see a matchup, they'll just continue to pound it, and they've just done this exact thing with Drummond in the past. So, you know, it's always a little bit dicey for me playing a guy who just hasn't come close to paying the current price on a, you know, points per dollar basis. Like, in an ideal world, I'm playing guys who, you know, that are 9,500, but have already averaged 47 fantasy points a game this season. Again, early season returns, though, the plan is also in close games to play Drummond 35, 36 minutes a game. And the fact that he hasn't so far, I think a lot of that is just, you know, game script related, foul trouble related. And, you know, it'll get tugged down a little bit because he's the type of guy who does get in foul trouble from time to time.
Yes.
But against a team like the Nets, it's not very likely to get him into foul trouble. I'd be totally fine playing the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting here, Drummond has had four or more fouls in every single game this year. Fouling out once, got ejected once. So there's definitely something... the one game wasn't against the Nets. He didn't do it. But there is something to the fouls. When I looked at season-over-season increase in shot attempts, Drummond was one of the highest season-over-season increases in the whole NBA. He's just shooting a lot more and was not shooting as well. Now, the three-pointers haven't really materialized. We saw them kind of sort of doing that to start the season in the preseason. He's only taken two and missed them both. But in 31.5 minutes per game, he's averaging 17 shots a game. Last year in 34 minutes, he averaged 11. That's a huge, huge increase. And he's shooting worse. And he's the kind of guy he's going to get himself back up to like 53% shooting, I don't think, without a doubt. And when that happens, I think we're just going to see, we're seeing major, major upside on a guy whose price has fallen because of two bad games against Boston and an ejection against Philly. What about guys like Blake? I really feel like this is like the Blake and Drummond thing, and there's not a ton else to consider, but I mean, could you see that stacking them in a pretty good matchup?
Yeah, Blake looks good to me. I think the $9,000 price tag, $8,800, I guess, right now, is still too cheap for good matchups. I mean, he was, the last time he was in a good matchup, I can't remember what game this was. Oh, it was Philly. He was a 75% owned player, and you know, he had, like, he was, I think, fairly owned against Cleveland, and then back-to-back tough matchups against Boston, going back at home to Brooklyn here, you know, going against such a bad team, fast-paced matchup, bad defense. I think you'll see big-time ownership on Blake, also just because he happens to play the tight end of the NBA, which is power forward. Just not a lot of great options there at power forward tonight. So, yeah, I think you'll see some really nice Blake ownership, and it will be justified.
Yeah, the power forward on FanDuel thing continues to be an issue that you just have to roster two of these guys with the way they section off who actually qualifies a power forward. Guys, like, Josh Jackson's a power forward. I get guys play shooting guard. Like, I don't really know. I'm not even sure. There's no rhyme or reason to, like, who even they list at power forward. I'm looking at... three or four guys here that I don't think even play power forward. They either play center or some other, like, small forward position. Anyway, yeah, power forward is still a problem. Brooklyn, I mean, are we still just in the Brooklyn plays their guys 29 minutes and maybe you get lucky to get up to 32 on a random night at a, like, D'Angelo Russell, but the way nothing seems to have changed in the way they seem to want to run out their starting rotations.
Yeah, Caris LeVert is the guy I only look at on Brooklyn. I think he's the only net averaging more than 30 minutes a game right now, and you know, sometimes you can still get value when guys play fewer minutes than that, but really it's about minutes consistency, because minutes consistency is where we get, you know, a normalized price, and then you can play a guy in a reasonable matchup. With Brooklyn, they just don't really have that, even from LeVert, frankly. So going in a bad matchup against Detroit, you're not going to play any of these guys tonight.
Denver goes in and plays Chicago. Denver coming off a win again. Denver's been really good to start the season. They're coming off a win over, Anthony Davis-less New Orleans team, but they are 8-point road favorites. That's a lot for a road. That's a lot for a road favorite. This is like getting into the Warriors kind of area.
Did you see who their opponent was?
That's what the thing. Chicago is just couldn't be worse. But I'm a little concerned here about Denver, because on a points per minute basis, they have some of the best guys in the league. Like, you know, starting with Jokic. Jokic, when he plays, there's a few other guys that can just, like, triple double as quickly as he can, and his minutes for the last, basically this whole season, 29, 33, 23, 32, 31, and then 34. And a lot of these are close games, like 32 minutes in a 2-point game. 23 Good. Minutes he was in foul trouble in a 10-point game, 33 in a 7-point game, 29 in a 5-point game against New Orleans. Like, yeah. You just can't give the guy 35 minutes. I don't really know. It's a real shame. I guess maybe we're going to see the price continue to drop, but I can't consciously play Jokic in cash games if this is going to be the plan for him. I like Jokic or Drummond. I think I'd easily choose Drummond, and I understand that the matchup is much better for Jokic.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, Denver has a long track record of not wanting to play their big men, big minutes. Jokic had a little stretch there last season where he was, you know, settling in the mid-30s minutes, and it just hasn't been there to start the season. And I think if you combine that with potential blowout risk, like the fact that Jokic's minutes are already uncertain, that he could play between 28 and 32, that's a huge amount. I mean, a seventh of his minutes could get, or an eighth of his minutes could get shaved off just for no reason at all.
Right.
You already don't like that. And, you know, throw in the fact that it could be a blowout, and now all of a sudden you miss a whole quarter, it would just be devastating. So it's funny, like those guys, you know, Boogie Cousins was this way too. When you're excellent on a per minute basis, that's great, except for when your minutes are erratic, because
yes,
if you lose 4 minutes out of Jokic, that's like 7 fantasy points and you're just dead. So I'm with you. I don't mind playing him. I don't think he's a terrible player or anything, but it does feel like Drummond's a little safer tonight.
And it's worked. I mean, the Nuggets are 5-1, so it's not like that. You can't really fault the guy. You can't at this point. Saving his thing. It's just from a DFS perspective. I know people love Jokic and want to play him a lot because he can really fill it up very quickly. And I've just been warning people for the last like 3 games at least, just saying, you know, people are like, why isn't the projection on Jokic higher? It's pretty easy. The guy doesn't play. The guy plays 30 minutes. There's nothing else to say about it. Millsap's really struggled this year. Gary Harris has seen a lot of minutes without Barton. This is a great matchup. Anything else to like about the Nuggets side of the ball?
Yeah, I think all these guys are, you know, playable, I guess. I mean, Jamal Murray, I think, is still playable on the $7,400 price tag. He's paid this price fairly handily in his last 2 games. Good matchups against LA and New Orleans, but still a good matchup here. And I think you can plug him in if you'd like to. Gary Harris, I think, you know, it's when I say playable, these guys are all sort of on the high end of what I would hope to pay for them. Mm-hmm. But I still, you know, if they showed up in an optimal lineup, I would kind of shrug my shoulders and move on with my life. The only guy I think I wouldn't want to play out of the starting lineup on Denver would be Millsap. I just think, you know, he's just not a future player in this offense. Too many games with, you know, single digit shots and yep. single digit points and stuff like that. It's just not, why bother to me?
Yeah, he's basically the fourth option on offense at this point when you kind of roll down the line, and that's really too far for his price. But on the Bulls, they have two guys who play a lot and one guy who takes all the shots in LaVine. LaVine mm-hmm. is, and talk about other guys who are seeing pretty huge usage bumps year over year. He went from shooting 15 times a game, only 27 minutes last year. He's shooting close to 19 shots per game. Been really efficient, over 50% from the field, 39% from three. And he's also, adding into that, he's also getting to the line a lot more. He's getting to the line twice as much this year as he was, a little less, 4.5 times per game last year, 8 times per game. He's expensive, but the usage on this guy is through the roof. And in a close game, you have to figure, like, if you're, how close of a cash game play, I guess, is Levine for you, knowing that clearly the plan is to just say, dude, just shoot as much as you want, and your minutes, even in, if the game's even a semblance of close, you're going to play 37 minutes and get up over 20 shots per game. How valuable is that, even on a seven game NBA slate?
Yeah, so Levine, I'm not as bullish on as I think a lot of people. He's up to 18 shots a game. I think he can potentially sustain that. The thing that I'm concerned about for him is actually the increase in field goal percentage. I mean, 52% for a guy who shot 38% last season just seems to me like you got to shoot a lot of jumpers in the gym to make that happen. And granted, like you said, he's getting to the line a lot more, but he's also, and which means he's probably driving more, which is going to jack up the field goal percentage, at least on some level. But I just think that level of increase doesn't strike me as totally sustainable. So I think Levine's good, but I think the fact that he's basically already not quite paying off this price on an average basis, and there's that increase in field goal percentage, a lot has to go right for him to continue to be worth $8,500 going forward. And he basically has three okay games on this price for this season, like where you're not, two games where you're happy, one game where you're like fine, and then the rest are like meh, not too excited. So I think in a game where they're 8-point dogs, I could live without playing Levine tonight.
I was seeing if I could get this up in time, because I was going to look at, I got this video playing me in the background for me right now, but I was trying to get to, that just really distracted me on NBA.com. I was trying to get to his shot chart, because this is something I'll look in, and I'll, if I remember.
Yeah, he's another guy that's, like Walker too, worth going deeper on Levine. That was definitely just my, kind of gut analysis, and it's worth
my guess deeper. Is for him that he's probably going to regress some, and if I'm going to look at it, I just hadn't gotten blasted out through my earphones in this NBA.com video that showed up of him in a highlight that just really threw me off my game here, but I'm almost positive he's taking the ball to the basket more, and
seventh in the league in drive points per game.
Yeah, so and that actually explains why the free throws have gone up a lot too, right? Like, so if he's being more aggressive on his shots and getting to the line more, I think that maybe he's not going to shoot over 50% for the year, but maybe the shooting will be more sustainable because those are just easier shots. So anyway, yes, worth going deeper on. All right, let's move on because we're spending a lot of time on some of these games. All right, Utah, Minnesota. One thing early in the season, I like to, before we start using like some base DVP numbers and some, as we get to see pace normalizing, and it's really hard early in the season to use, you really can't use five games worth of NBA data. It's definitely not for defense versus position, which is becoming increasingly less useful as the years go on. But what you really can't make over judgments on teams. But I do like to see where our projections are based on just some Vegas lines. Like, are we in the ballpark? Are we within 5%? Are we within 10%? Utah is a team that we have been really low on this year. I mean, like 14% low on their team total, something like that. You know, not to the point where like it's not just a one guy outlier kind of thing. It's something is something else is going on here. We have right around a 214 total right now. I think when we look at our stats for them based on historical stuff and some projections, we're at like 100 points. What do we do with a team when it's like that? I know this is a loaded question. I'm not really giving you lead time to prepare for it, but this is a thing I've definitely noticed with a couple teams, but specifically Utah, if their pace is increasingly, how do we reconcile that our projections, while really close for almost every other team, is way off for a team like this?
Yeah, I mean, it probably means we're low on them overall. I mean, Utah has averaged 113 points a game this season, so if we have them for 100 or whatever you said, that's an indication that our system would, at the very least, think that Minnesota would be just a terrible matchup, and that's not the case. You know, Minnesota's probably a league average matchup at worst. So, yeah, I think that indicates that we need to go back and probably just examine what our underlying assumptions are in terms of their overall pace. Do we have them shooting fewer shots per minute than they would normally be? Like, that's, yeah, just we got to go turn over a few stones. It's not something I could just throw out blindly why we're too long.
Yeah, no, I kind of threw it at you. Now, knowing this, though, knowing that when we look at your projections for Utah, can you sort of mentally bump up some of these guys? Like, do Donovan Mitchell and Ricky Rubio come into play? Derek Favors is questionable. Jay Crowder did take over the starting position and played a decent amount of minutes. Is there anything you like from a cash game perspective? You know, knowing that maybe our projections also might be just trending a little bit on the low side for this team.
Yeah, so it's funny. We're actually just kind of lucky that Utah would be the team that we are low on, because a lot of these starters have been extremely underwhelming, at least from a game-to-game basis. I think we actually caught Rubio in that 154-point game against New Orleans.
That was a golden god. My god, he just couldn't. He was like peak Steph from the way he was shooting. The way he was shooting from three. Yeah,
we got him in the best possible game and walk away on all the 15-point games. But yeah, Rubio been just generally terrible in a fantasy basis. Donovan Mitchell quietly terrible on this price too. Like, he was an $8,000 player last season. The team is scoring whatever 10% more points per game. And he's been good in exactly one game. So we haven't missed anything on those guys. You know, Joe Ingles is just whatever, just totally run-of-the-mill. $6,000 small forwards, fine. Nothing exceptional. Derek Favors, like you mentioned, been in and out with the injury. The guy we have missed on is Rudy Gobert. Gobert is rebounding the hell out of the ball right now, 14 rebounds a game. It's also scoring a lot too, almost 18 points a game. So maybe all of that extra scoring goes to Gobert or something. He's also, just like always, just blocking every single person that comes in the lane, averaging 3 blocks a game this season too. Actual monster. But so yeah, maybe we bump up Gobert. I don't know. We probably want to look at it overall. Some of these points could be coming from the bench overall, though. Yeah, we haven't missed out on much by not being on the Utah bandwagon.
Yeah, it's interesting. They do have some bench scorers like Burks and Exum and guys like that. So team that's definitely worth looking into. Gobert is not going to draw much in the way of resistance defensively from guys like Towns tonight. Towns is not a very good defender. Now, Gobert is not a guy that will punish you like with a low post game, and he will punish you by rim running and just being able to, like you said, just getting the angles on rebounds at Towns. Understands on some level at this point, and still not anywhere close to Gobert's category. Minnesota, this game does have a pretty high total. Can you talk yourself into Minnesota? They might be without Wiggins again. We've seen increased usage on Butler, Towns, Teague, and then Derrick Rose plays a lot more with Wiggins out there. Is Utah a team that we still really kind of want to avoid from a DFS perspective, or does this implied total make you at least perk your head up and saying, oh, maybe Utah is just allowing more points this year?
Yeah, I'm paying attention. I mean, everyone's allowing more points this year, so there's that. Utah, well, they're not playing like the actual slowest pace in the league and allowing the fewest points, which is normally how they like to roll. They're still a pretty bad matchup. I mean, bottom five or top five defensive efficiency, middle of the pack pace right now. I think you're going to end a slightly below average pace. So I think you'd still rather not, especially on like a bigger Wednesday slate. And like you said, it's not an avoid at all costs sort of situation. So, you know, if the right value does happen to peak up, or, you know, for whatever reason, the money just happens to work on, I don't know, say Towns or, you know, someone like that. Yeah, probably not Towns, because you don't want to smash him into Gobert. But if the money happens to work, then maybe you live with it. But yeah, you're not trying to force it by any means.
Indiana goes in and plays the Knicks. Indiana is 6-point road favorites against New York, who is running out of weird starting lineups like Noah Vonleh and Mitch Robinson, and they're just signaling that they just want to lose every game. They and the Cavs and teams like this are already in the tank hunt for these first round picks. So get a whole season worth of Knicks, just crazy weird starting rotations to try to figure out. Now with Indiana, though, I have a question about. They're weird to me because they really have not played in many close games this year. Their first 1, 2, 3, I would call their first 3 games were blowouts. So I'm saying like 20 or 15 or more points separation. Then like sort of a close one against Minnesota. Then another 20-point difference in San Antonio. A close-ish game against Cleveland. And then a close one against Portland. Guys like Collison are guys that confuse me because they've long only really seemed to want to play him like 29 minutes. And yet in the closer games, he's played 30 and then 36 minutes last game, and that was with Tyreek Evans back. He's a guy that's coming cheap. Man, the worst thing ever was when you're auditing minutes and you see Derek Collison play 36 minutes the game before, because you know if you give him 32 minutes at his price, that guy is just going to be in 100% of lineups at 5,300. What do we do like him? I have 30 minutes. It's really close right now, and I just still don't trust that that's their plan to play him a lot.
Yeah, I guess the question is, like, what are you going to wind up missing out on if you don't play Pacers guys? Do you think these guys are going to bump up and be chalk plays that you'll get crushed by if they're not in there? And I think in the case of Collison, it's funny, like, our system was just dying to play this guy for all those early games, and when he was playing 25 minutes a game, it wasn't looking too smart, but in the last 2 games he has paid the price. So you know, that I think now that we're getting a better sense of what Indy's actual plan is, I think we can tread a little bit more confidently. That being said, this is a FanDuel thing as well, but the price has just jumped. Like Oladipo was $1,000 cheaper 3 games ago, and now he's $9,400 for this guy. Give me a break.
Nah, you can't do it. Like,
can I play him once for fun and just like move on with my life? Like, no, I guess I can't. I just have to sit and not play any Pacers, I guess. But
see, the funny thing about Oladipo is too, like, he just the $9,400. They've really priced, at least on FanDuel, they've priced all these usagey kind of shooting guards in the same zone. It's like Oladipo, DeRozan, Butler, but then like Levine's $1,000 cheaper than those guys, right? So it's like, you know, Klay Thompson's $3,000 less. I just thought those three guys specifically have seen pretty dramatic bumps in usage, and it seems like they're all just kind of too expensive, and they all kind of fit like the why bother category for me because there's been a massive price overcorrection. There are other guys like Miles Turner, Thad Young. I think there are good games in there for these guys, and maybe the price is still a little bit depressed because of the Collison minutes. That kind of stuff translates to the other starters as well. And I don't know. These sites are price correcting a little bit more on matchup, and just they're kind of like seeing it ahead of time for some of these guys. Like, these guys are just going to play. All right.
Makes sense.
The one game that we're really going to have to monitor, and I'm not sure we're going to have the news in time, because this game, we go from those first four games for 7:30 and all 8 o'clock, and then we have a 2.5-hour gap until the New Orleans and Golden State game. There's no line in the game right now, and that is because Anthony Davis is questionable to play. He has not played the last two games for the Pelicans. This is the one that really matters, and I'm not sure we're going to have enough time to figure it out.
So real quick, the note right now is that Davis's availability would be determined after shoot-around. So that's the operating assumption right now, and so maybe we will know, and maybe we can just go quickly into how this game looks with Davis and without Davis.
Okay, so with Davis, obviously they can keep it closer, so you're less worried about the blowout. Golden State has been just running roughshod over everybody this season, and they look like they're just like setting records in 3 quarters worth of basketball. I saw a tweet about this. I kind of wish that Steve Kerr would just kind of say F it and just play these guys the whole game. Like at this point, just like try to get Steph 80 points. Like, it's, I don't know. The other teams aren't going to put up a fight. That's like on them. It's like not their fault. It's not the Warriors' fault that they're just so much better. Anyway.
Well, they're not doing it to be nice. They're doing it because they just don't want to waste people's legs.
No, I know. But I still think it'd be fun to, like, I don't know. You had 14 threes. Go for 20. Let's play the fourth quarter. I don't know. Let's see if you can do it. No one will ever break the record. If Davis played, we'd obviously take usage bumps down that we have applied to the Pelicans across the board. A, would you be comfortable playing him in a Warriors matchup at his price point? Or if he didn't play, are you too worried about the blow? They've not looked good without him. They lost to Denver. They got blown out the game before. They have looked pretty bad without him. Would we be so worried about the blowout? Talk to me your overall thoughts about this game. This one's going to be tough to break down without the news, I think.
Well, without the news, it's not going to be very easy at all. But with the news, well, here's the things that we know. With Davis this season, the Pelicans were averaging winning by 11 points a game.
Yep.
And that leads you to believe at least that we wouldn't be operating under the blowout concern, you know, state of mind when looking at this game. So basically that would make all the players from this game playable. So that would be really, really nice. If Davis doesn't play, you treat it like any normal Golden State game. You figure out who's going to score all the points for Golden State and, you know, make it a blowout in the first place. So, you know, you're probably looking at Durant, you're looking at Thompson, given how, you know, inexpensive he is, given that we know now that there's nothing wrong with him or whatever. And on the New Orleans side, you're probably just taking strict value plays. I think you probably still can play Randall. You know, it's kind of weird. We saw him have a terrible game against Utah, but he went back to being that per-minute beast against Denver and is still pretty affordable at 6,600. And then outside of him, you know, it's probably just big tournament plays. You know, you figure, hey, if these guys can keep it close, you know, maybe I do want a share of Jrue Holiday or something like that. But yeah, you might wind up being in a tough slate. I don't know if you mentioned this before, because I was just looking up some numbers and stuff, but Elfrid Payton also ruled out for tonight for New Orleans too. So, you know, that also obviously frees up a little bit of usage there to spread around. So yeah, it's going to be the most important game on the slate. And hopefully by the time you listen to this, the Davis news has come out and he's playing and none of what we said is obsolete.
I think you have if Davis plays, I think that you are in an okay situation, actually, and I think you can do it on FanDuel, stacking Curry, Thompson and Clay together. Like, it's going to come at the expense of not playing like other mid-tier guys like, you know, Drummond or Aldridge or guys like we'll talk about here. Obviously LeBron too. I don't think you need to pay 12 for LeBron. But that is a That gives you a pretty high floor on these three guys, and they've been so damn efficient, even just all together. The really good news is that Clay is still coming cheap at 6,600. That's why you have the ability to sort of stack these guys together. And right now we have guys like Meritage, Etuan Moore, Jrue Holiday coming into lineups, but this is assuming that Davis is not playing. So we're going to have more. We'll have more information. I think the one guy we talked about this, the one guy you can kind of avoid on the Golden State at this point is Draymond, because he's just really not getting there on a fantasy points per minute basis, just with the way the other guys are scoring. This is a really interesting 10:30 slate of games because there's a Dallas and Laker game. This game is a 235 over under with the Lakers as 7-point favorites. LeBron's coming at a crazy 12-4 price on FanDuel. I don't know if I personally don't really want to play him at this price. I know Dallas has been worse defensively, and this game is a huge total. This seems too expensive to me. And then I'm also wondering your thoughts on JaVale McGee. He's playing around 30 minutes. He's a guy that's really been able to fill it up on a points per minute basis. He's going to have to face up against DeAndre. What are your thoughts going both ways, Dallas and the Mavericks, in what looks to be a very high scoring game? I said Dallas and the Mavericks. I meant Dallas and the Lakers.
Yeah, I like McGee. I think that DeAndre has always been sort of an overrated defender. He has flashy blocks. He's obviously insanely athletic, but in terms of just like good, solid post defense, helping on rotation, stuff like that, he's just not really there, I think, even at this stage in his career. So I think you can still play McGee. I think my take on LeBron is the same as yours. He's just like among these really expensive guys, he's just not one of the ones that puts up the scores on a night-to-night basis. And I don't think that's where you need to be. Like right now, our system is drawing out just tons of guys from that New Orleans Golden State game and, you know, basically just filling in gaps around the fringes. And I think that's probably where I want to be for cash tonight. Obviously, for big tournaments, LeBron is in the conversation of big money guys who can go off. He's the most expensive player on the slate overall. So, or I guess that assumes Davis doesn't play. He's the second most expensive player after Davis. But after him, it's Durant. And I think it'd be difficult to argue that, you know, between LeBron and Davis, that those aren't the two premier fantasy point production guys on the slate. So, and from a price basis, you know, maybe you punt a position on FanDuel and you just wind up with LeBron if Davis doesn't play. But I don't think you're building your lineups around him from the word go or anything.
I think a sub 5,000 Wes Matthews on FanDuel looks pretty attractive. His minutes have really been there for this team. He's been able to take shots in the offense as well. He strikes me as if there's a value play on Dallas, I think it's him. I think the rest of these guys like Doncic and even Barnes, Dennis Smith, Smith's still not playing a ton of minutes, no matter sort of what the situation is. Those guys all strike me as just a little bit too expensive. And then the Lakers, Lonzo's just not playing a lot of minutes. Rondo outplayed him off the bench the other day. They have a lot of these wing guys that they're struggling to sort of fit in. Kuzma did stick in the starting lineup, even with Ingram coming back. But there's just, it's so hard with these guys that they're not really hitting value on an individual basis, even though the team is projected to put up a lot of points. So I think for me, it's mostly kind of just JaVale, and even that one's kind of close. At 7,000, he really needs to play like 30 or 31 minutes. The final game on the slate is the Spurs and the Suns. No early line in this game, and I'm assuming it's because of Devin Booker news. Like, I'm not exactly sure. I guess, yeah, he's doubtful right now, so I don't think he's going to play. And then Isaiah Kanan is also questionable, and Josh Jackson is questionable. So I'm hoping that we get some more news out of Shoot Around about what the Suns' plan is. They played Okobo like a ton of minutes off the bench for the point guard thing. I really hope we just have this ironed out ahead of time. And then we have the Spurs, who DeRozan has come in and been, I don't know the word for it. He's been amazing. He's 22 shots a game, yep. Shooting 50% from the field, still not shooting any threes, and yet still to be a guard and not shoot threes and to score 28 points a game is like so hard to do. Like, I just don't even know. You just need to be so damn efficient and every single
game,
thing you do.
I mean, that's he just gets in there and starts dribble, backs him into the lane, you know, does that little move and shoots a two-pointer from 5 feet away that looks easier than it should. But
like,
just looks like him, the guy in the pickup game who just always dribbles in and you're like, oh, this guy's shooting again, but then he makes it and then, you know, just
with him
back to the other.
His pricing, I mean, how much do we want to bump up like his scoring per game? He's over what we had him projected for. New situation. Mm-hmm. Scoring a ton, he's 9,700 though on FanDuel. Like, I just don't. I feel like we're getting into the too expensive range. Even though the rest of this stuff has been there too. He's got assists and rebounds. He's averaging 8 assists per game. What do you think about DeRozan? Is he entering the upper echelon of like safer big money guys at this point?
Yeah, I think with the way San Antonio is using him, I think you have to trust it. I mentioned Zach LaVine and his drive points earlier. He's averaging 9 drive points a game. That's good for 7th in the league. DeRozan leads the NBA with 13.7 drive points per game. So he's just in the lane constantly. And with a smart coaching staff there in San Antonio, I'm sure they've also pointed out to him, hey, like, if you get triple team down there, you can always pass. And it's just looking great. I think DeRozan, in some ways, he's like, his game has always struck me as more of like a natural shoot first point guard, you know, like the guy who just gets in there and defenses have to collapse on him because he's so good at finishing around the rim. And then, you know, if he's inclined to, or if the team is set up to have guys around the perimeter that can shoot, he could take advantage of that too. So, no, I really like DeRozan. I think he's going to be worth it on these prices. I think he'll settle in as a $10,000 player as the season progresses. I think you want to probably exercise some caution if the price goes too north of $10,000. But right now, I mean, especially the one game, you know, his only bad game on the season here is against Indy, and that was a game he played 33 minutes in a blowout. So after that, you know, you're looking at 49, 60-plus point games. Like, this guy's a monster.
And, you know, it's funny you say that because about the shoot-first point guard thing, because San Antonio has long not really wanted to give their point guard a lot of time on ball. Like, we've seen this years and years. Like, you know, Patty Mills starts and doesn't really have time on ball. Deontay Murray is a guy that didn't want to play for a ton of minutes. And that's just
Parker, basically.
And even with him, they, like, as he got older, they just didn't, that really wasn't the plan. It was to kind of give Kawhi the ball. And so it seems, at least from the number, the way the numbers suggest, DeRozan is acting just more as that sort of de facto point guard thing at this point, because he's playing all the minutes. Bryn Forbes is barely touching the ball. He leads, I think DeRozan leads the team in assists. So I think what you said, it's sort of playing out on the San Antonio side for how they're using him. And if that's going to be the case, then I do find that these numbers to be sustainable. All right, we're going to get out of here. Dude, it's Halloween. We can't just be going over on a podcast. There's trick-or-treating to be doing. Tricky-treating.
Not my neighborhood.
Tricky-treating to be doing.
Tricky-treating.
All throughout the neighborhood. All right, dfsr.com/deals gets you that free 7-day trial. So go check that out for the podcast listeners. It's a discounted rate. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, NFL. It's all covered on the one subscription package. So go check that out, buddy. Talk to you again, I think, Friday when we talk more basketball. Enjoy your Wednesday of NBA hoop action.
Peace.